Editor's note, this is the first episode where you'll meet a few of the student executive board members. I'll explain in a minute, but just a heads up, this is a break from our regular thematic format. Synapse is a student-run organization that I'm fortunate enough to be the faculty advisor for. Leadership is a five-member executive board made up of second-year medical students. Throughout this first season, I want to give them each a moment in the spotlight to talk about any topic they would like. And when you know it, the first two who decided to record told stories of their journeys to medicine that had a common theme. Families can be complicated, but the notion of family is one of the most vitally important constants in life. Families tear, and families mend. Families rally together in bad times and celebrate in good. Today, two Synapse leaders will share stories of family and loss in the first eBoard episode of Journeys to Medicine. Sue Young Vandermark is a member of the class of 2025. Her journey has spanned multiple degrees and multiple disciplines. A native of Ithaca, New York, Sue Young studied English, feminist, gender, and sexuality studies at Cornell prior to studying publication design and then shifting gears to biomedical science. We're happy she made her way to medical school, and she talks about that journey in Act One of our program, The Silver Lining in Death and Dying.
As a current medical student, when I tell people I had a career as a graphic designer, I get a lot of raised eyebrows. So let me explain. I started working in graphic design simply because it paid well and offered a lot of flexibility. But what I always knew about it was that it was temporary. I wasn't planning to spend my life doing it. I wasn't particularly passionate about it. It was very much a means to an end, a way to pay the bills. So in my late 20s, after a terrible breakup, I decided to throw caution to the wind, and I moved from New York City back to my small hometown upstate. A few months go by, and while I'm living at home with my parents, I am just having a total crisis. What am I doing with my life? And as I'm trying to figure this out, something kind of amazing happened. My grandmother died. And I know that's a terrible thing to say, but stick with me. First, my grandmother totally would have laughed at that joke, and that is very important to me. She may be dead, but I want to respect who she was when she was alive. And honestly, she was a drinking, smoking, and cussing kind of lady. Second, and this is the real point of my story, I want to share how death can be transformational. I truly believe there's a silver lining to everything, even our own worst fears. In August 2010, she was diagnosed with a cancer metastasis to her brain, likely stemming from lung cancer. Now, as medical students listening, you might wonder, how could it get so far before we knew? Well, it's important to put it into perspective. My grandparents were poor and rural. They had been raised with that country farmer mentality. You might go to the doctor if you're bleeding profusely, but even then, can't you just try to tough it out? You know, maybe wrap a towel around it. But we also didn't know sooner about my grandma's illness because denial is very real and powerful, and denial can be paralyzing. She was a lifelong heavy smoker who didn't take care of her health. Undoubtedly, there were signs prior to her terminal diagnosis. Maybe there were even earlier diagnoses, but if so, she didn't share them. After the diagnosis, things were a whirlwind. I watched my grandpa and my dad try to navigate the healthcare system. Medications, insurance, and complex medical jargon. Mind you, a few weeks ago, my dad asked me how to spell ketchup. It's K-E-T-C-H-U-P, if you're wondering. So my dad and grandpa were terribly ill-suited for this role that they were suddenly thrust into. Not to mention the emotional reckoning that all three of them, my grandma included, were experiencing due to her terminal illness. My grandfather had hit his head a few years earlier, and as a result was now on the frail side. It was a running family joke that he was definitely going to die before my grandmother. Spoiler, he does not. But it wasn't long before it was decided that he could not take care of her at home anymore, so she was put into a state-run nursing home. If you just shuddered at the words nursing home, I completely understand. It's because of places like this. I won't describe it because you already know exactly what I'm talking about. These places are very much a shameful reality in our society. So my grandmother spent 3 weeks, 21 days straight, at the end of her life in that place. Thankfully, HospiCare, which is my town's local hospice, swooped in and saved her. And they didn't save her, she was terminal, and she died in October, about 8 weeks after her diagnosis. But she spent her last few weeks alive at the hospice residence in a private bedroom overlooking the woods. It was not a bad way for a poor country girl to go out. She could smoke on the balcony, play cards with the volunteers, and have ice cream or candy, you name it, whenever she wanted, day or night. The hospice residence was a home for death, but it was also full of life. Not only did hospice give my grandmother a good death, but they also saved my grandpa. And this time when I say saved, I actually mean that. My dad, to this day, is convinced that HospiCare, which only has 6 beds, took my grandma in because they saw that her dying was causing my grandfather's health to rapidly decline too. My family was facing not losing one grandparent, but both. But once hospice took in my grandmother, they started to help my grandpa with his meals, housekeeping, and emotional support. And that support didn't end when she died. The staff checked in with him for a full year after her death. He lived another 4 years after his wife passed, and I am beyond grateful that I was given that extra time with him. My pre-med journey began as a volunteer at that same hospice where my grandmother died. My dad told me how much she liked the younger volunteers from the local college rather than the older retired women. I figured instead of using the flexibility of graphic design to cavort across the country to see my friends, I could use that same flexibility to volunteer at the residence. My first client lived for 2 months before passing away. I visited her weekly in her bedroom across the hall from the room my grandmother died in. I ran into the client's daughter a few months later at a remembrance ceremony, and she told me how much her mother had appreciated my visits, which is basically the same thing my dad had told me about my grandmother. For me, it felt like things had come full circle. Obviously, it was upsetting when my grandmother died, but she would be ecstatic and proud to know that her death propelled me into finding my passion. Her death literally changed everything about my life, the direction I went in, how I interpreted my past, and what I strive to achieve in the future. As a society, we shun talking about death and dying, but so much good could come from facing our fears, being vulnerable, and making the most of our mortality as individuals. And as future physicians, we have an even more special role to play in shaping how people, communities, and our whole society dies and thinks about dying. I implore you to explore what it is you think about death and dying.
Edward Liu is a member of the class of 2025. Although Edward spoke at our adversity event, I was struck by his commitment to family and his developing identity as a son growing into a young man. Edward's journey encompasses not only his desire to do his best academically, but more importantly, grow into the good person that his family echoes throughout the generations. In Act 2 of our program, Edward Liu with Overcoming from Afar.
My story began at the Lower East Side of Manhattan, New York City, where I lived in public housing for one third of my life. Growing up there was tough, with my parents working long hours to make ends meet, arguing over almost everything, and hoping to provide me and my brothers a better life by leaving the public housing area. No longer do we want to come home smelling and seeing urine and feces in the elevators and stairs. No longer do we want to hear the sound of gunshots and sirens at 3 a.m. It was time for a change. My parents worked extra hard. They gradually lost their normal selves. My father's temperament worsened. My mother forgave her health and got diagnosed with breast cancer. She even delayed her treatment in 2002 to bore my younger brother. By then, however, her cancer aggravated and it was too late. Her first chemo treatment partially helped her And over the span of several years, she went on remission. There were moments where she was as lively as the angel sent from above. There were also moments where it seemed like she never slept. She was at the pit bottom of her life. She felt like a living zombie at moments. During periods of remission, she was always reluctant to listen to my family members, despite telling her to rest and take care of herself more. She even said that if I don't take care of my children, we will have nothing. We will eat dirt and we will have nowhere to live. Over the years of her battle with breast cancer, she was always, always reluctant to change. In a way, quite stubborn. When we finally relocated to Brooklyn, what we initially thought would be a promising, pivotal moment of our life quickly faded. When my mother was constantly in and out of the clinics and hospital because of her deteriorating health, witnessing my mother's once lively smile gradually fade, her once luxurious hair thinning, and her becoming paralyzed from bottom up, tore my heart apart. In the summer of 2007, there was one moment when she literally went up to me, being very immobile, barely able to walk, barely even able to speak. She told me that she no longer wanted to live. She said that it was too hard to bear the pain. She has given up all hope and that she just wants to have a better life elsewhere. My heart shredded into pieces and I was struck, confused. I didn't know how to feel and what to feel as I was 9 at the time. I remember that night I was woken up by a nightmare of my mother's death. I cried myself awake, thinking, the time is near. My mother is going to die at any moment. However, when I woke up, I let out a huge sigh of relief that it was just a dream. I repeated again, it was just a dream. This, however, was short-lived. When the dream became reality the following fall of September, it was 3 or 4 a.m. at night. My grandma told me and my brothers to wake up, that we had to rush to the hospital to see my mother. Arriving at the hospital, the sound of graves, the sight of tears streaming down people's faces, I knew something was up. Heading to my mother's bedside for one final time, I see my beautiful mother lying there, her once extraordinary complexion faded. She was pale. Her complexion was noticeably pale. She was trying to force her eyes open to try to touch our faces for one last time. At that moment, my heart almost gave out. But at the same time, I just didn't know what to feel. And I was confused, standing there, wondering, what is going on? Moments later, her eyes closed and the tears streamed down everyone's faces. There were no more vitals. The end was near. Life slipped away. We knew that she has left us. I essentially lost a guardian angel in my life, and at first it was really hard to absorb all of it. I couldn't believe that things were happening in an instant. At first I felt purposeless in my life, and was always at the pit bottom of my mood. In simple words, my life was never the same again, and my self-esteem plundered. I became more introverted and reserved than ever. In addition, my father being the only provider of my family, working in retail at the time, was difficult, as he was constantly in debt, budgeting, and also was working extra hours to make ends meet for the sake of me and my siblings. Over time, I eventually got a bit used to her lack of presence and continued working hard on my academics. There were moments where I would just walk to my mother's room to see if she was there. That big bedroom full of lively memories, also memories of darkness, gloominess, and despair. When I wish she was there, the only thing that was there was just the bedroom and the faint memories of my dear mother. It was not until the summer of eighth grade where I began to find a sense of purpose in my life. I remember that before my mother passed away, and even after she passed away, my grandmother would always say that my mother wanted me and my siblings to be good people. Whether we're successful or not, whether or not we'll be able to make the big bucks, all she wanted us was for us to be able to contribute to society. So that summer between the transition of middle school and high school, I got to intern for a general surgeon who was a great friend of my mother, who operated on her when she had breast cancer. I was touched by the radiant compassion and sympathy that he had towards his patients. He echoed the same virtues my mother once passed on to me: sense of goodness, kindness, and the work ethic that she passed on to me. My mother's friend sparked within him a passion for patient care, a kind of care that lives and breathes genuine sympathy and compassion. At the moment, I had an initial spark in medicine. It was not, however, until the junior year of high school that I had a huge interest in medicine. I volunteered at the same hospital my mom passed away in, and unexpectedly, relived the same precious final moments I had with her, breathing the same air, passing by the same rooms, and just absorbing myself within the environment before the final moments she passed away. I do admit that it was hard to immerse myself in the environment at first, with the flood of memories of the past rushing to me. I made use of the memories, however, the overbearing thoughts, to connect with the patients, share stories with them, and treat them like that they were my mother. I also interacted with the doctors to get to know them and learn from them, as I hope to better understand more about their work as physicians and the way that they interact with patients. The interactions throughout allowed me to witness the definition of good that I interpreted from my mother. My time at the hospital finally helped me realize my purpose in life: to be the good person my mother always wanted me to be, to pursue meaningful life, and to strive to do good for myself and everyone around me. For the sake of her, the true calling was medicine. In college, I moved to Boston to pursue my pre-med journey at Boston University. It was indeed a huge and tough transition. It was my first time being outside of home for school. I was also really dependent on my family for my needs, especially financially. That made me all the more homesick, as I miss my father, my siblings, my grandma. I miss those unique bonds that we had back at home. I was also really worried about my financial situation, especially since I was borrowing huge loans in addition to my family's poor financial situation. My dad was constantly in debt, struggling to pay off the mortgage, the credit card loans, and even food in general. There were also many other factors, including inferiority complex, lack of self-esteem, and just an overall feeling of despair. It was also very overwhelming considering the competitive environment of pre-med. Despite such challenges, I constantly reminded myself my core purpose at Boston: to fulfill my goal to become the physician that I wanted to be, to fulfill my mother's wish for me to be a good person, and to fulfill my family's desire for me to essentially be able to take care of myself, to achieve something that my family have never achieved, to earn better income, and to essentially get out of that lower income zone. Yes, there are times that I would almost give up. I would pull my hair. I would cry myself to sleep. But despite such challenges, I kept traversing through the slippery roads and overcoming the obstacles, as I know that my dear mother is watching me from above and my family is supporting me through thick and thin. I kept striving for opportunities. I kept connecting with people, and also, of course, kept maintaining my academics. I made use of each and every obstacle to fuel my perseverance, to help me become stronger in the face of adversity. Now that I'm at Geisinger, I feel much more at home, as everyone has a similar purpose: to become future physicians, to make our families proud, and to contribute to society for the better. The challenge, however, still remains clear. Myself, my financial situation, and the upcoming obstacles that lie ahead. Regarding the financial situation, my father has been working long hours daily, earning a relatively low income. Despite this, my father has high hopes for me and my siblings. He is the definition of diligence, perseverance, and greatness. With my father's high hopes for me, my ongoing goal to be the good person my mother always wanted me to be, and also my consciousness, my wish for me to improve myself every day, to become a better person. I hope to overcome all the challenges amidst the face of adversity. As the dawn comes near, the curtain rises. I know that the tunnel ahead will get brighter. There will be many unforeseen challenges ahead of me, but at the same time, there will be also many opportunities awaiting for me to achieve. But no matter what the situation is, no matter the ups and downs, no matter what I will face, I will hold true to myself. I will always have my mother in my mind, and also my family. I'll continue to strive for a better tomorrow, as my dear mother watches me from afar.
The voices you hear on Journeys to Medicine are those of the members of the Synapse Medical Humanities and Storytelling Club at Geisinger Commonwealth School of Medicine in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Thank you to our speakers for not only their participation in this episode, but for helping guide Synapse and encouraging new members to share their stories. Thanks to the rest of the Synapse Executive Board, GCSOM leadership, and my fellow faculty. I'm your producer and host, Dr. Ian McCoog. We'll be back next time with a brand new episode on identity, so please subscribe via Spotify or the Podbean app so you don't miss out.